This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 17. Today's guest is Frank Forte of Forte Leader Tech.
This is Squadron Leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is the show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing the work that matters not only to them, but possibly the rest of the world. Every Thursday, we publish another conversation about the art and science of truly living a life of passion and how you, too, can do the work you're meant to do. Today's hosts are Brian Whitaker and myself, JC Preston. We're part of the crew at New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping people do passion-filled work and, more importantly, giving them the resources and community to share it with others. Today's episode is brought to you by HostGator, your one-stop shop for your web hosting needs. It's the beginning of the year, and you might have a lot of ideas for various projects coming up. One of the best first steps in getting known by others is setting up a website and domain name. HostGator gives you 24/7 live support for chat, phone, and email, and they even have an easy-to-use website builder. In fact, they even include a one-click WordPress installer. And for our Angles of Latitude listeners, they're offering a discount on all their hosting packages. So visit newinceptions.com/HostGator to get started on your new website. Today's guest is someone I think a lot of you veteran creators are going to like. I've known Frank for 5 years now, and he's one of those types of guys who's rather hard to pin down. Recently working with companies that are in the US, Germany, and Japan, Frank specializes in helping successful companies and leaders reconnect with what makes them great and really, in my mind, bringing soul back to their company by helping them reconnect with their passion and their people. As of this particular recording, the site for Forte Leader Tech isn't actually up to code, but I think that sometime down the line it will be. So if you're listening to this in 2016 or beyond, I believe it'll be a great way for you to know more about Frank and what he does. So with that said, let's get on with the show, where part of what we discuss includes two big keys in being a good leader, why Frank believes knowing how to wield leadership is vital in being a successful entrepreneur, no matter the size of the business, the most important traits that an entrepreneur should have, and what he believes that companies have focused on in the past 10 years, and what that means for entrepreneurship in the future. So enjoy this conversation with Frank, and for the show notes, you can go to newinceptions.com/session17. If you have any questions or ideas for the show, you can let us know at heyguys@newinceptions.com. I'm always looking for new ideas, and I'll be back after the conversation to fill anything we might have missed. Hey, everybody, and welcome again to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Today's guest is Frank Forte. And it's definitely been on my radar for a number of years. And just to kind of give you an introduction to who he is, he's managed and participated in projects and programs for various clients around the U.S. and now actually around the world, including the U.S. Navy, Air Force, the Army, NASA, Computer Associates, Computer Sciences Corporation, and Verizon. Today, you can find Frank's on the speaking circuit. He mentors, coaches, and consults for individuals and companies on how to affect change through these projects that he's working on. So that kind of gives you an insight on who he is. And Frank, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, JC. I'm looking forward to it.
Did that about cover everything?
Yep. I think you've covered about 30 years of trying to figure out what leadership is and how to affect change with it and transform people and organizations.
Awesome. Also with us today is co-host Brian. He's kind of coming back from having his third kid. So how you doing, Brian?
Hey, doing good, JC.
Yeah. How's that? How's the new edition going?
New edition's great. Everybody's happy and healthy. And he's starting to get a little more sleep than we got the first few weeks. So that's always good.
Right, right. Well, it's definitely changing times, I guess you would say, but I'm sure you're a pro at it by now.
Yeah, every kid's got their own little quirks and stuff, so it's funny how much you forget from one to the other.
Getting back into things real quick here, Frank, we had actually met back in the John Maxwell team certification program, and actually at the training week, and you know, obviously that says that you're really big into leadership, and you know, as most people there could attest, I mean, that's, if you're wanting to get into leadership, you're going to get certified by John Maxwell. But, what are you, specifically, how are you using that if you are, and, what are you up to these days?
So, you know, the way I've been able to use some of, John Maxwell's, principles and some of his content that we got licensed, to use is I go into organizations and kind of try to figure out what's not working, where the dysfunction is, and then apply some of his materials to change that to make it functional. And one of the biggest areas is communication. Over and over, I see that organizations do not communicate effectively. And because of that, a lot of other symptoms arise, and people tend to kind of blame the individual instead of recognizing that the organization has a core dysfunction, and solving that helps go a long way. You know, using agile techniques, you know, where we use stand-ups, where we talk in very short periods of time, and, you know, management by walking around. In large organizations, people can be 30 feet away from each other and they'd rather send an email than get up and go have a face-to-face conversation. And I find that a lot, especially when I'm working with IT developers and creative people quite often.
Yeah. No, that's IT people. You know, you're talking about introverts there, and they're, you know, what's funny to me is actually being, and I don't know how you want to say this, but being a recovering introvert myself, quote unquote, and some people don't like that terminology, but someone that is naturally an introvert, I can see why they would do that, because a lot of us are actually better on the computer and technology, and just find it easier to do that. And I'm sure that's something that you bump into pretty regularly.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. People that don't want to communicate, don't communicate, whether it be text, Skype, email. So it's really about communication. It's not, you know, introverts, you know, one of Daniel Pink's books, you know, kind of evidence that introverts are just as good as salespeople as extroverts. And most people are not introverts or extroverts. They're kind of in the middle there anyways. They're, you know, kind of both. So I try to separate communication from personality, which, you know, I'm a big fan of discovering, you know, people's personalities and that stuff fascinates me. But I really think that we've lost the art of communication, and we've lost teaching people how to communicate. And we use technology as an excuse to not communicate. So I think, you know, the more organizations can communicate, whether it's, you know, individual entrepreneurs like yourself, communicating with vendors, customers, partners, you know, there's always more room for communication. And that's what I see that hinders progress and transformation. And transformation of people is part of the leadership responsibility.
Right, right. Real quick, I mean, kind of doing a little bit of the outline here of leadership, but how did you get into being into leadership in the first place? Because I kind of want to set that framework of why it is that we're talking about it and why people can kind of look at you as an expert on the subject matter.
Well, I would say it really began when I was, 13, 14 years old. I was working in my dad's restaurant, and by the age of 16, I was managing it. And I was responsible for hiring and firing people that were maybe twice my age. So communication became critical to make that environment work. So that was a very, I'll say, a low-tech environment. A lot of people were in high school. Some people didn't even finish high school that worked there. But it was an environment where you had to communicate, or people didn't get their food or didn't get clean dishes or whatever the case may be. After that, I entered the military, and what I found very quickly was that leadership is critical on a nuclear-powered submarine. If you don't know what you're doing, who you're doing it for or with, and when you're supposed to be doing it, people die. So, the Navy has a very prescriptive way to communicate, and you learn that, and it's really, kind of not beat into you, but it's a lot of repetitive training that makes it stick. And then getting to see good leaders and bad leaders in a microcosm, you have 120 men on a submarine, and you can, you live there very close to them for months on end, you figure out who the good leaders are and the bad leaders. And then you start to, investigate or wonder why. Well, what makes this guy a good leader? It's obvious that he is, but there's nothing objective that says he does this, this, and this. So that fascination with leadership began, the journey that I've been on for, 25 years. Mm-hmm. And when I find a good leader, I, I'm fascinated by them. I study them. I try to figure out what they're bringing to the table, and then go from there and see how I can incorporate that into my talks, my training, what I do as a leader, day to day.
Well, so I have a question about that, Frank. So you said, you will look at the personalities of these leaders, and you can, especially when you're on a nuclear submarine, you can tell who the good leaders are and who the bad ones are. Is there, and it seems that you're talking about communication a lot, and that's a big part of what makes a good leader, maybe. Would you say that's true? How they communicate?
I think there's two keys. A leader, they first have to be self-aware. And a lot of leaders are not self-aware, so they don't even get off of, square one. And what I mean is self-aware, and I was doing some research on your site, JC, New Inceptions, and a lot of the stuff that you have on your introductory page and introductory podcast is really at the heart of leadership. And if you're not self-aware, if you don't know what your strengths are, if you don't know what your personality is, it's going to be very hard for you to be a great leader. And that's why I start a lot of the conversations with the leaders I work with the teams I work with, is finding out, what their strengths are and helping them to leverage those strengths as a team or as an individual. So, and then often you have this problem. The next step is, well, given your personality or given your strengths, how best can you communicate with others? And, my example is, StrengthFinders 2.0. I don't have woo. That's not one of my strengths. I know it. So what I do is I find people on the team that has that strength, and then I leverage them when that's the required skill set. So,
Frank, when you say woo, what do you mean by that?
So, if you haven't seen StrengthFinders 2.0, I recommend it. I think JC recommends it as well. But woo is that ability to make people feel warm and fuzzy, if you will. They just have this ability to just kind of empathy and just really make people feel comfortable and really warm. And it's even hard for me to describe it because I don't do it. But I found people on my team that do. And so I'll send them off to do tasks that require woo. And there's things that I do better that they don't have. And so that complementing each other is part of the job of a leader, is to find, you know, it's you know, get the right people on the bus and then figure out where you're going. Well, the right people have to have the skills sometimes that you as the leader do not have.
So kind of to change it a little bit here, you got into consulting, out of the military, right?
Yep.
Okay. So again, you've been doing that 30 years.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So, being a consultant, generally speaking, would you actually call that being an entrepreneur? I would honestly think of it as being a freelancer, and that would be one of the subsets of being an entrepreneur, at least to me. I mean, what do you think about that?
Absolutely. You're having the same challenges that any entrepreneur has. You have to get customers. Mm-hmm. You have to establish a price for your product. You have to, you know, market yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to pick a discipline, if you will, or your niche, and then you have to network to get that business or keep that future business, or you know. So you have to have a sales pipe, just like any other business. Mm-hmm. And you have to, you know, kind of stay up with the market to see what you have to do to remain viable. You know, whether it's tools, techniques, systems that you have to put in place. And then it's actually harder because, you know, every customer really drives what you do differently. So you have a product, but that product has to be shaped for each and every client you engage. And most of my engagements tend to be, a year or longer. So it's in my mind, it's more than just freelancing. I know some people that call themselves consultants, but they have typically 3-week engagements or something like that.
Right.
So, you know, a lot more like doing a web design for somebody or, you know, writing, mm-hmm. ghostwriting a blog post or something like that. But what I do is I actually go in and become part of the mechanism of these large organizations to help them transform themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You help the captain right the ship, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. And that's one of the things that is normally you're not going to see when transformation is needed inside your organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why leadership is at least 50% outward and 50% inward. So we've got to lead ourselves before we can lead others. And that's one of the principles that the military taught me, is that, you know, you need to learn to follow. And following means you have to lead yourself and basically align yourself with another leader. And throughout life, one of the principles I follow is I'm constantly reinventing myself, transforming myself, so I can be a better leader before I try to lead others. So that's why I'm a lifelong learner. I'm constantly looking into new ways to, brain hack, if you will, to kind of get things done better, differently, change the way I think about things. And I don't mean, you know, I don't change my principles. I probably haven't changed my principles in 25 years, but the approach or how to get results really is open to innovation in my mind, constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Frank, you were just talking about kind of tactics and brain hacks, like, but kind of based on your bio, when JC was introducing you, he talked about how you worked with very large companies and very large organizations like, you know, the U.S. Navy, NASA, you know, Computer Sciences Corporation, Verizon. These are all very, very large companies. Do the tactical things you teach leaders in those companies, do those apply to entrepreneurs and small businessmen as well?
They do, because, you know, the scale changes, and actually it's easier in my mind to be a good leader in a smaller organization than it is to be a good leader in a large organization, just because of the bureaucracy and just the number of, and I don't mean bureaucracy in a negative way necessarily. Often it is negative, but just the number of communication channels that you have in a large organization makes it more complex. So, you know, I'm working with a entrepreneur, you know, a venture capitalist firm out here in Seattle. And, you know, the ability to get everybody in a room and have a conversation is a lot easier in a small, you know, firm. So, you know, last week I had the two co-founders at dinner, right? So that's pretty easy to, you know, sit across from each other, have a glass of wine or whatever, and get work done, you know, make those bonds, you know, brainstorm, get those ideas on the table, collaborate, and then move forward with an action plan. So Everything is, in my mind, everything is easier the smaller it is. And then you've got to really pay attention to making sure as you grow, make sure that you don't sacrifice the things that really made you successful, whether that be, you know, innovation, you know, strong communication, caring for people, seeing people as humans, which often you lose as you get into these large organizations. And it's almost remembering that people are not just resources, they are really people. And people are the things that get things done. Nothing else actually does.
Right.
Did I answer your question, Brian?
Yeah, I think so. I'm also kind of curious, like tactically, like, you know, we're kind of talking high level. I'm just thinking tactically, like for the listeners, like if these type of leadership communication tactics, you know, can be helpful to them, like is there something that a leader in a small company, maybe say they have 1 to 3 employees or something, is there something that they might do or some way that it could identify, like a way, something they should do better?
Well, one of the first things have a client in, I think he's in Idaho or Wyoming, and he's an outdoor enthusiast, and that's what his company is built around. And in coaching him just this week, you know, he was telling me about periodically he'll report in and tell me what he's been up to. And the biggest coaching to him this time was what is your 90-day goal? You know, and I know JC and I have talked about, you know, there's different models here, but right now I'm liking a 90-day goal and a 10-year goal. And what I try to get people to do is have a very precise 90-day goal. That's going to be what they focus on as an organization for the next 90 days. And that is something that a lot of people don't do, is you don't align around a goal and you don't make a choice. You know, if you don't have a goal, you're not making a choice. And so you don't know what to spend your time on. So that's one thing. And then directionally, the 10-year goal is something that's over the horizon. But basically, it's directionally giving you guidance on making choices over the longer term. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I love how you, it does. I love how you said, if you don't have a goal, you're not making a choice. Like, you're being led by your circumstances, essentially, right? Like, you're not choosing a direction.
Yeah. And the other thing I try to help people understand is, you know, again, at the small scale, is they are 100% responsible.
Yeah.
And you know, and I know JC has said this in his work, and it may be a little bit just more direct, which I tend to be, is that, you know, there's everything that happens in your business, you're 100% responsible for. So, and a lot of times I need to, it depends on their personality again, I've got to convince people to operate above the blame line. Because as soon as you go into that negative space, you know, blaming a competitor, blaming a customer, whatever, you're out of the creative space. And as JC, you know, said, and you know, is that you're helping creators. Well, the only way you can be a creator is to stay in the creative space. That means that it doesn't matter what your competitor does. It only matters what you do.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So I feel like now you're getting on to mindset too. Like mindset of being in the right mindset is important because you're 100% responsible.
Absolutely. And that's where I think that's where, you know, the not everybody is cut out to be an entrepreneur, not because they could not. It's they don't want to transform their thinking.
Right. And that actually leads me into my next question. Exactly. If someone wanted to, if they're coming from the corporate world or they're coming from academia and they wanted to be a consultant or, you know, as you are, you're a consultant and a coach, as you just had mentioned, what are some of the things that they might want to do as they're stepping out into that world? I mean, what are some of the specific things that have worked for you to go from gig to gig?
Well, I think, in particular, they, you know, need to understand who they are. They need to become self-aware, mm-hmm. meaning they have to, you know, do StrengthFinder 2.0. They need to do Standout, and I'm sure you'll put these in the show notes. You know, you know what they are.
Yep.
I think they're already on your website.
Probably.
and they need to really know what really thrills them. You know, in corporate space, it's very easy just to kind of go through the motions. And you can be very successful, mm-hmm. But you're not going to be thrilled. You're not going to get into that, you know, the state of flow a lot of time because it's not a very creative environment. You know, we can argue that we haven't really created anything in probably the last 30 years. You know, we do some innovation, but most of what we do in corporate America is marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can't make it on your own, if that's all you do as an entrepreneur, you've got to have value. And so one of the things I constantly think about is how am I adding value? What is that value stream? And how do I increase the value I deliver for the dollar or the time that I'm asking from my customers?
Right. Well, I guess one of the things that I've always been kind of curious about how you do things. I mean, do you, on top of the adding the value point, because I think there's a lot of people that feel that they do add value, but I think I was going more towards like, do you, you know, when you don't have a specific, you always seem to have at least one project in the hopper. I do know that. So that's definitely something that they have to think about is, you know, keep adding rolling balls of different sizes. I think that's what, am I off there at all?
You're absolutely right. I'm working with two businesses right now. I've got my major ball, which is a global transformation for an electronics company that is headquartered in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And that keeps me pretty busy, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've got two coaching clients that are, I'd say mid, they actually have businesses, they have clients, they have revenue, you know, they employ, you know, 3 to 15 people in that range.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got, two, one is, is a wantrepreneur, you know, he's, you know, doing licensing deals and innovating and creating, not a lot of revenue yet.
Right.
So I keep a spectrum of things, to help me stay busy, to help me stay excited, to help me, keep transforming. And then the other thing I do very, very, often, and you've got to do it as an entrepreneur, is network. Mm-hmm. So, you know, constantly, you know, LinkedIn or, you know, whatever your tool or choice is, pick one, be good at it, and use it.
Well, and that was what I was getting to, is like, what, I mean, do you visit BNI often, or do you use LinkedIn? And if you use LinkedIn, how do you use it to get opportunity?
Most of the time, LinkedIn is a way for me to share with, you know, share what I'm doing. I'll participate in discussion groups, mm-hmm. and I get a lot of, you know, the biggest thing at the stage now is I don't have to push a lot of content. I've got a lot of connections, so if I just post an update, I probably get, you know, 30 responses, which I think is pretty good,
right.
You know, in a 24-hour period.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that there, you know, people are watching, and so when I need to, you know, start looking for a new opportunity, and then I network with the people that are constantly getting requests for me. And now that's a challenge sometimes because, you know, recruiters or people that think they want to do business with you but never convert to an actual sale can take up a lot of your time. So I've got to, you know, I'm constantly paring back who I actually respond to. And not if they have a need, you know, I'm there to help. And that's the other thing is I give away a lot. So I'm constantly willing to help, whether it turns into a paying consulting gig, coaching gig, whatever it may be. I want to make sure that value proposition is front loaded in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I had one recent experience where I had a client, I was doing some work with them, you know, that no money had changed hands yet. And he argued with me that he wanted to pay me. And I said, you know, I really don't think it's time yet, but he insisted. So that's the ideal for me is when people decide they want to give me money for the value that I've given them.
Huh. That's very, that is almost to me alien thinking. I mean, I think that especially coming from my generation where we try to do everything as cheaply as possible, I think that goes to show you that you're working with some pretty cool or pretty high value people, I think is what I'm going for there. So
yeah, you know, it's interesting to me. I kind of have a little bit different take than you, JC, but it's similar. Like the way, Frank, you're talking about value, and like I instantly thought of like, well, how do you quantify value? You know, like how do you measure that? How do your clients or prospects or, you know, the people you work with, how do they measure the value that they're giving you, you're giving them? And I think it's like, to me, what I've learned from in my own business is like the value. Once people recognize your value for them, it's like a no-brainer, right? It's like, yeah, I want to pay you because that way I get to have you, you know, right?
Right. Well, but on the same time, I would say that, you know, there's going to be people that continue to take as long as they can take. And so I'm just saying that what he's working with are people that see it the way that you just described it and, you know, are actually.
Yeah. I think exactly what you're talking about, JC, is those people he's been trying to pare back. Cause like, those are like the, not ideal.
Right. Right. So in other words, the people that they're self choosing themselves to be prospects of his, which is really cool.
And I think that, you know, whenever you do business with someone, it's like a dance, right? You've got to decide that you can partner together well, and it can be a thing of beauty. If you're stepping on each other's toes all the time, then it's not going to be a good relationship. And those types of relationships operate on the competitive plane. And the really exciting ones, the ones that you kind of get up excited about, are the ones that operate on the creative plane, where you're actually creating just by being together. And to, mm-hmm. you know, Brian, to talk about a little bit of how do you know there's value being produced is when a client says, hey, I hadn't thought of that. That really sounds good. I'm going to stop doing this and I'm going to start doing that because, you know, you really made it clear to me that that's might be more valuable for my business, might be more useful of, you know, spending my time. So when I see those things, then I know that I'm zoning in on the right frequency. When I see the opposite is when people say, I can't, I won't, I don't know how, a lot of negative words, and it's resistance. Yeah. So they're resisting the change, they're resisting the transformation, they're resisting the opportunity. Believe it or not, a lot of people resist the opportunity because of fear, because of laziness, because of all those things that we hope that we don't exhibit, and you know we're constantly holding ourselves in check around. But normally it's not because, and if somebody says, help me figure out how, that's a lot better than saying, no, I won't, right? They cannot know. I mean, that's fine. Everybody right. doesn't know everything. But when they resist out of principle.
Right, yeah.
And we know those people, right? Then I've got to move on because I'm going to expend way more energy and deliver a lot less value, not because of not wanting to, it's they're not ready.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, that resistance you're talking about, totally, I've seen that. I've had that too. You know, I think everyone sometimes has that. Like it's like someone gives you a great idea and you're like, yeah, that would be great, but, and it's whatever it is after that, then, you know, that's the resistance.
And I try to keep, you know, coaching folks and it is the mental state that you're in is I coach people to allow everything, right? But not necessarily accept everything. So as long as you're allowing whatever is, then you have a choice to make. Okay, what am I going to do with that? You can't. A lot of these larger corporations, they you know have this. I'll say at the executive level, have an arrogance that they can, you know, defy the laws of physics, and they can't. And it takes a while for them to figure that out. And often I'm long gone by then. But it happens that, you know, they think they can move mountains. Really, they can't. And so, you know, there's tough consequences to, you know, I like the saying that says, you know, you can deny reality, but you cannot deny the results of reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what people tend to do is when they, you know, if they need to make a change and they don't, reality creeps in eventually.
Yep. Yep.
So along your journey, Frank, again, just about as long as I've been alive and longer than Brian's been around. So you have a lot of experience, but, have you learned the most three important skills that a successful entrepreneur should have?
I'm going to use a broad definition of skill. I think integrity is the number one thing that somebody that wants to make their brand has to have, mm-hmm. First and foremost. And integrity is tough sometimes. You've got to be willing to say, hey, I screwed up. You need to be willing to make it right. I would say that communication is another huge skill. And then that idea of focus. So there's so many creative people, people that want to create something that I find lacks focus. And that's, you know, you can tell that I've narrowed, while I've done a lot of different things, I've always done it with the same same tool set, mm-hmm. Leveraging the same skills as, you know, I lead and transform individuals and teams.
Right.
And, you know, I do that by leading, deciding, and acting. So those are the three cores of what I do is, you know, I lead, then I decide what we're going to do as a team, very collaborative, but then we act. And, you know, it's, you know, I like what, I forget who said it, but you'll probably know as soon as I say it, but you don't want to leave the scene of a decision without taking action.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one either.
It totally fits. I love it.
So, and that's especially true in larger corporations because, you know, you have this tendency to meet all the time and, you know, discuss, and especially right now, culturally, this is a whole nother dimension. I'm learning to work with the Japanese culture, mm-hmm. which is fascinating and frustrating all at the same time.
Do they feel like they're constant jokesters or something, or what's your feel on that?
The Japanese will discuss and very rarely do they make a decision. Huh. They're, you know, minimal viable product does not come into their vocabulary. They want perfection in everything. And, you know, they actually think the creative, you know, the creative process is, you know, it's art to them. Mm-hmm. So, it's very hard to move them on a timeline. So time has real no meaning to them. You know, we've been, you know, in the U.S., we've been around 200 years. They've been around 2,000 years. Mm-hmm. So they don't really take a lot of direction, you know, from us easily. So,
That's interesting.
Hey, so Frank, one of the things you mentioned is that you affect change through projects. What do you mean by that?
Well, change really in any business, you have day-to-day operations. And so, you know, you're taking orders, you're shipping product, whatever you're doing. If projects are transformative. You know, they start and end. They've got a specific goal, and they should have specific benefits. At the end of the period, the benefit will be we can, you know, innovate faster. We can reach more customers. We can deliver our product more efficiently and lower cost, whatever that goal is. And so a project, you know, normally takes additional resources to get done. And so if you're going to write a book, let's say you're writing your first book, you know, it's a project. It's going to have a start, and hopefully you put a deadline on the end of it. You know what it's supposed to look like at the end, you know, whether it's 10 chapters or 20 chapters. I recently got to help name a book that one of the people I'm working with just finished writing. It was 473 pages long. Yeah. Now, you know, he didn't start there. He had self-published four or five books before that. But, you know, you can imagine if you want to write a book, 473 pages, you've got to have a project plan. You've got to have a start and an end. You got to know what it's going to take. You're going to need to know who you need to get involved. You know, they got a publisher involved and all that stuff. So, but now there's a 473 book, page book that will change his life and many others. So yeah. He won't be the same company he was before he published this book. So that's what I mean by projects really drive change inside of organizations. And that also, in my mind, people are what makes a project. So you've got to get those right people to play. And we were talking about personalities, skills, strengths, and all that. You've got to have that right mix. Unfortunately, in our current day, most people are more concerned about the cost of the project versus the value proposition. And I think that goes back to a lot of major corporations. And I think entrepreneurs, you know, JC kind of mentioned it. Yeah. When you go for the cheapest, you know, cheapest way possible, you're not, you know, you might get 30-40% of the potential benefit or value out of the project. So there's a minimum cost to get anything done, but the value that comes out of it is the variable cost that you invest in it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Frank, you mentioned it seems like it's. cost is a concern now. Has that changed from when you started to, 20, 25 years ago? Has that changed from then until now? Is there a shift towards, you know, sensitivity to cost?
Mm. Yeah, I think it is. And I think at the larger scale, I think it's, you know, it has to do with the current economy and the economy for the last 10 years or so. You know, before it was, my sense is, and, you know, is that before it was, how can we create value? How can we create growth inside of our organization? Now it's more of, how can I do the bare minimum to not go backwards? Mm-hmm. So there was this kind of, you know, I'd say in the probably the last 10 years, there's been this real sense around minimizing the capital investment in endeavors instead of trying to maximize the value through capital investment.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I imagine that's not everywhere, but I definitely have felt the same type of search for the absolute cheapest cost for something. But so if we take that, right? So if we take what's been rough or negative or bad in the past 10 years and just kind of flip it around, what, you know, if you look ahead, what excites you about the future? What's something good that can come in the next 10 years? For you and your business?
Well, you know, the people I work with, you know, more and more they're small entrepreneurial organizations. And I'm excited because they're excited about their product. And, you know, whether it's viable or not, you know, we have that conversation. We help shape that conversation. And so I'm excited that there's all these green little sprigs of grass coming up all over the country. Because people have figured out, and again, it's on the front page of New Inceptions, is that, you know, we can't trust that a corporation is going to take care of us. We can't trust that we're going to have a job. We can't trust that that job is going to create the wealth we want it to create. So more and more, we have to take all this stuff into our own hands, and I see people doing that. And that's the part that's exciting for me, is there are hundreds of people that are doing what you and JC are talking about, and thousands. And, you know, especially out here on the West Coast, they have a vibrant incubator society group. They're constantly creating. It is a different vibe out here than it is in the Midwest. You know, I live in Cincinnati, but I'm out here on the West Coast, Seattle, and you know, this whole area has a vibrancy around it that I quite honestly, you know, I'm starting to see in Cincinnati. JC tells me it's in Indianapolis, but it's not anywhere near where it needs to be compared, you know, to here on the West Coast. So I'm excited because there is that vibrancy, and it is around entrepreneurship, and it is about individuals taking control of their own destiny. They are deciding to be 100% responsible.
Cool. Well, we're about 10 minutes away from the end of the hour, so need to get to my favorite part of the conversation, the rapid fire question segment. And people are always surprised by this. I'm like,
that was a devious laugh, Casey.
Yeah, well, I'm just kind of really curious at how Frank's going to be able to handle it. So, first one, what are three things that you'd want people to remember you by if all your work had suddenly disappeared?
I think my integrity, a passion for learning, and a passion for leadership.
Okay. Who are your three favorite experts and or leaders, and why?
Napoleon Hill, John Maxwell, and Waddles.
You know, it's funny that you should mention that, because he has an actual name, by the way. It's only been recently that I actually even heard of him. So, yeah. Go ahead.
So, Napoleon Hill and Waddles, and I can't remember his first name right now, because those are old school success. They were pioneers in the success industry, and everything that's happened since then is a rehash or a clarifying statement around their work. So, you know, for them to do that work back then in such a precise and complete way is really impressive. And then John Maxwell, just because he puts leadership and things that are hard to talk about, puts them in a way that they're accessible to business people if they want that.
Right. And just as a reminder, it's Wallace Wattles. And that's with T's, not with D's. It's not Waddles. Yeah. What would be five action steps that you could leave someone to, if they wanted to be the next Frank? How could they start on their path to doing what you do?
One, become aware of who you are, and we've already talked about how to do that. Mm-hmm. I think learn the skill. You know, go to work and learn your skill. Consulting. There's a lot of good organizations that train consultants. You can learn it yourself, but it's a lot harder. And then I would say, you know, start finding mentors. You know, find people that do consulting. And you know, figure out if you like it or don't like it. If you're coming out of college, there's, you know, great recruiting for consulting firms. It's going to be a rough 3 years. They're going to work you to death, but you're going to learn a lot.
Okay. And then the last one would be, what does success mean to you, and how do you achieve it?
So, JC, you've probably seen what I call success, which is building value into the lives of others. Mm-hmm. And as I do that, the financial rewards come, and I get to play on the creative plane. So I'm doing those things now, and that's what I call success.
Cool.
Awesome. So Frank, that wraps up our rapid fire questions. If people want to find you, or if people want to find more and learn more about you, where can they find you?
Certainly through JC and New Inceptions, and obviously on LinkedIn.
Cool.
Great.
Cool. Well, Frank, it's a pleasure talking to you as always. And, definitely look forward to, future success that you have, and, hopefully, building your presence online. So look forward to it.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, thank you, Frank.
There you go. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Frank. Again, the best way to contact him is through LinkedIn. I will be sharing his profile with you in the show notes and, again, the two books that he shared. Again, this session's show notes can be found at newinceptions.com/session17. As always, if you'd like to subscribe for free to the podcast, you can do so via iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Instructions on how to do just that are in the show notes as well. And this week's show note extras, I have a couple of pieces that I think further illustrates Frank's perspective on the work that he does. The first video is definitely a favorite of mine, featuring Simon Sinek. In it, he talks about the importance of starting with why and talks in depth about how Apple does things the way they do. I think you'll quickly realize why it's one of my favorite TED Talks. The second resource is one that is focused strictly on how important basing your life and your work from your passion truly is. I personally had a wow moment in this one as the person that Srinivas Rao, also known as Srini, from Unmistakable Creative, he's interviewing, who's the guest was Philip McKernan. Philip actually talks about how so many people in the world utterly refuse to follow their passion, even if they're clear on what it is. I mean, the talk was about more than that. It was really just talking about, you know, living your passion through your work. But the wow moment was, again, just even if you're clear on what it is, how do you move on from that? So anyway, I think it'll be definitely a good listen to you guys, and definitely a guy that I'm going to be paying attention to in the future. Tune in next week, where Trent and I have a fun chat with Myrna Bacon. Myrna is, or Mir, is someone I met through the foundation, and a course that she released last March about building LinkedIn communities. While she was able to start a business through what she learned in the foundation, I really think that what she discovered with building communities and LinkedIn is a real game changer. One that, in fact, if you like free things, if you want to build a community and you want to build leads, then I think you'll really want to pay close attention to Myrna's talk next week for sure. Also, while LinkedIn might seem to lend itself to more B2B relationships, I really think that there's some potential there for some retail relationship building too. So in the meantime, head on over to the show notes found at newinceptions.com/session17. And also feel free to add yourself to our already existing community at newinceptions.com/Facebook Masterminder. Be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. It means a lot and will help other people in the future find the show. And thank you in advance for doing that. So that's it. Session 17 is in the bag. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to talking to you again next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web @newinceptions.com.